Au clair de la lune. Just, I prefer to sing instead of counting. Well, thank you, Dr. Ian Germani, for this presentation. It sounded like it was what was on the website, because I think I've updated that lately. But well, thank you everyone for coming. Thank you for the library for hosting, and thank you to all of those who made this series of talk possible. There's no doubt that 1914 was a turning point for artistic media like literature, film, and painting. Dadaism and surrealism, among other arts movements, were direct reactions to the absurdity of the Great War. But what about comics? In the last 2 years, because of the Great War happened exactly a century ago, dozens of comics about this war have been published. All of these are very good, but there are two outstanding series that were published 40 years ago, one in England and the other in France, that offer a strong anti-heroic view of the war. The purpose of this presentation is to show how the representation of the Great War in these two comics presents significant ruptures with the heroic model. By rupture, I mean a deliberate attempt at deconstructing the heroic model. This illustration from Tardi, titled Ce qu'ils ont rêvé et ce qu'ils ont vécu, meaning what they dreamt and what they lived, expressed fully the concept of rupture that I want to explore in this presentation. The beautiful dream of glory, represented by the shiny helmets and the flag, feels creepy with the presence of the gueule cassée. It refers to those soldiers who have been disfigured in war. And the muddy, there's a contrast between those helmets and the presence of the muddy trenches in the background. Here's an overview of the presentation. I'm going to present the two comics about the Great War that I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the rupture with the heroic duel, what I will refer to as the anonymous death, the rupture with the heroic travel, and I will refer to that as stagnation, and also rupture with the recognition of heroism, and I will call it alienation. So first, a few words about Charlie's War, and if you're interested to know a little bit more about those comics, I've set them up on the table over there. Charlie's Wars comes in 10 volumes, and I only brought three because of excessive weight. Let's have a quick overview of some important milestones in the history of the medium of comics. Proto comic strips appeared in New York newspapers from 1898 onwards. Comic books appeared in the United States in 1933. Basically, at its origin, it's simply a collection of comic strips, and Famous Funnies is the first title published. Soon after, in 1938, Superman defines the new genre of superhero comics. Obviously, most of the significant developments in comic books took place after the Great War. Charlie's War, by Joe Colcown and Pat Mills, was published in England as a weekly feature from January 1979 to October 1985. In this series, the Great War is presented as a social turning point, a moment when the war of the classes became monstrously evident. And we're going to highlight the strong anti-heroic aspects of the comics. There were very few comics about the Great War published before Charlie's War. And there were a few of them, but like they were mostly heroic comics, and they were focused mostly on air combat. Now about Jacques Tardi. In 1914, in Europe, if single-frame political cartoons were ideal vehicles to serve war propaganda, on the other hand, multi-frame comics at that time were mostly geared toward children and were little influenced by the Great War. Furthermore, it was considered important to spare children from being directly exposed to the horrors of trench warfare. If the Great War was evoked in series like Bécassine and Les Pieds Nickelés, it was sanitized and the violence was kept at a level suitable for children. Tintin, an important figure in the history of Franco-Belgian bande dessinée, and I'm wearing a Tintin shirt here, appeared in Le Petit Vingtième in 1929, and this high-quality series would become a reference for many European authors. Jacques Tardi published many stories about the Great War as far back as 1974, But we're going to focus on these three titles here. C'était la guerre des tranchées, first published in 1983 and 1993, and Putain de guerre, published in two volumes in 2008 and 2009. Realistic details of life in the trenches are provided. Lies, rats, disgusting food, unfair officers. It puts war in an ugly perspective. The focus is on basic needs like food, bodily functions, health, not on the greater abstract ideas like justice or humanity. It is worth mentioning that Pat Mills, the writer of Charlie's War, is a self-declared Marxist, while Tardy participated in many left-wing activities. Tardy, among many actions, refused the Légion d'honneur, a prestigious recognition from the French government, in order to keep intact his moral integrity and his freedom of speech. These two authors, in their work, will exacerbate the gap between the social classes and make it the dominant theme of their stories. The system of classes not only creates a divide between the have and the have-not, but also, when the Great War comes, between the who lives and who lives not. In that rupture lies a great human tragedy that drives their stories to their sad and unavoidable conclusion, the death of many poor men of the lower class. Now, for the sake of simplicity, from now on, I will refer to those series as Charlie's Wars and Tardy, so just to avoid like saying all the others' names. Now, I'll start first about the heroic duel, and here, just to give you a mental image of what it could be, you can figure out like two Greek heroes fighting each other. So this is a model I created. The visual narrative of the Great War featured in Charlie's War and Tardy resists analysis with traditional models. For example, Vladimir Propp's theories about fairy tales or Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Face are not very useful when it comes to describing war in the trenches. For this reason, I created a model from a collage of different concepts. The model enhances the contrast between the traditional heroic approach and the anti-heroic stance adopted in Charlie's War and Tardy. I will spend no more than a few minutes to explain the model. The model's premise is that a story is composed of a collection of interactions between entities. Some of the interactions constitute the main plot of the story, while other interactions either lead to it or develop parallel stories. Entities have an existence because they're brought up by the story. Here, now you see there are three moments: exposition, crisis, and denouement. And I forgot to translate my illustrations, but I'll guide you through it. An action is at the center of the crisis, and here I put it in red. So here you see they're using their hands for action. And it defines what comes before and what comes after. An action applied to an entity can either transform it into another entity or move it into a different existential domain. The innovative feature of this model is that it combines the position of the self and the other with the ontological statuses of idol, being, and thing. About the three statuses, we have at the very bottom the status of thing, where entities can be possessed and disposed of at will. The status of being grants its holder all the basic rights, like freedom and the right to possess. The status of idol, on the other hand, is granted to entities that are considered superior and worthy of respect and admiration. This status is usually granted by a collectivity. Those holding the status of idol may have more rights or certain privileges not accessible to a simple being. An idol might be a ruler by divine right, like the French king Louis XIV, or a famous football player like Darien Durant. Simone Veil, who was a contemporary of Sartre and de Beauvoir, defined the use of force as the transformation of a man into a thing. So here I have the original French version. I propose your translation. Force is what makes a thing from whoever falls under its influence. When it is used to the end, force transforms man into a thing, literally, because it makes him into a thing. Similarly, Paul Fussell detected three statuses when a man dies on the battlefield. For the poet Charles Sorley, The Transformation of Man into Corpse is a three-part action. First man, then when hit animal, writhing and thrashing in articulate agony or making horrible snoring noises, then a thing. Now let's take a look at what the model can tell us about the representation of combat. Normally the public, through the process of identification, will assume the position of the self. During the exposition, the self knows perfectly who the other is. The latter might even be famous, and this, of course, will contribute to increase the status of the hero during the following interaction with the community, as we'll see later. Both the self and the other have good and valid reasons to engage in combat. Both the self and the other have the status of being from the exposition to the denouement. And this is true even when the other is transformed into a cadaver here. During the crisis, both the self and the other use an action against each other. Both have some capacity for resistance. And it is the clash of the action against the resistance that will determine the outcome of the crisis. The public wants a good show, and a well-balanced combat provides more entertainment. Ultimately, the other will be transformed, while the self will resist transformation. The combat should ideally be won because of a matter of some kind of moral superiority, like a superior will on the part of the hero or a sudden remorse on the part of the other. This ancient illustration shows the body of Sarpedon after being defeated by Patroclus. We note the care and respect given to the dead body. In this regard, during the duel between Achilles and Hector, the latter asked Achilles to respect his body after his death, but Achilles refused, and with his last breath, Hector prophesied Achilles' death. Then, as we know, Achilles treated Hector's body as a thing by dragging him around Troy with his chariot. What Achilles did was to break one of the unwritten rules of heroic combat. Now, let's take a look at a schematic of the representation of combat during the Great War. What do we note in this case? Again, as per the heroic duel, the public will assume the position of the self through the process of identification, from the exposition to the denouement. This time, the action will result not in the transformation of the other, but in the transformation of the self. This is one big rupture with the heroic model. In Charlie's War and Tardy, the spotlight is shed on those who die, on the cadavers, and not on the surviving humans. The novel All Quiet on the Western Front by Remarque ends with the death of the main character. For Tardy, to focus on a single character could potentially create a hero, and for this reason, Tardy prefers to showcase a variety of characters to reflect the multiplicity of individual experiences. In Charlie's Wars and Tardy's Album, the characters have no control at all over the action and simply appears as witnesses who just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Another big rupture is the fact that the other is unknown. In the representations of combat during the Great War, it is unclear who is trying to transform the self. Because of the nature of trench warfare, most of the time it is impossible to see with any detail who is shooting. Even if this was possible, because all soldiers of the same nation are wearing similar uniforms, it is virtually impossible to know the name of the human trying to transform the self. Is it a human who is equal in status to the self? So here I put some options to fill the blanks here, but like we don't know really who is shooting. So is it a human who is shooting at the self with the same status? Or could it be a machine, like a machine gun or a big caliber gun? Or could it be the wrath of a superior being? In this universe without a visible opponent, even the Terran itself, here this is a representation of the Terran, can be one of the entities trying to transform the self. About the interaction of men and machines, it is interesting to refer to John Keegan's book titled The Face of Battles, in which the author describes how soldiers are feeling on the battlefield. Keegan's essay is organized according to interactions with certain types of weapon. In the case of the Great War, weapons are machines, like big guns, machine guns, etc. The point is that humans are not fighting humans, they are fighting weapons, which are things. Since the other is unknown, the reasons to fight become blurred. What motivates the other? And when the self dies because of unrelated entities, like a disease or deterrent, what higher reason is there to be learned? What higher lesson is there to be learned? This lack of clarity throws the reader in an uncomfortable situation, which is exactly what Charlie's Wars and Tao Tse are trying to achieve. During the crisis, the action of the other meets the resistance of the self, but in a proportion that is anything but balanced. The self's own resistance appears futile in the context of the Great War, especially when the other is a machine. It appears quite clearly that survival in the trenches is a matter of luck, not a matter of training or superior fighting skills. This total lack of control over the crisis is under big rupture with the heroic model. The denouement offers a double transformation. First, the human in the position of self is transformed into a cadaver. This is not something new, and it will not necessarily be an unglorious thing in the context of a heroic battle. But in this case, the cadaver is also relegated to the status of a thing, not unlike Fussell described it earlier. This leaves the self with no dignity. And this is where the horror lies. The horror is not to see a dead body, but it is to witness the status of the body shifting from being to a thing. The more trivial the thing a body is transformed into, the greater the horror. Horror generates fear, the fear of imagining oneself potentially transformed into a thing. Here are a few strategies adopted by Charlie's Wars and Tao Tse to create the effect of horror. The complete disappearance of the body is frequent, especially with shell explosions. There are stories where dead bodies abandoned in no man's lands are being consumed by rats. A human becomes food for animals, themselves considered things which render the whole process even more horrific. The mutilation of the body is another frequent device used by Tao Tse. The human body is usually considered an inviolable totality. In these illustrations from Charlie's War, a soldier is directly hit by the explosion of a shell. This is the epitome of an anonymous death, when nothing is left of the body. The human simply disappears into nothingness. The same is true about the mud pit. In Tardy's illustration, a poor, unshaved poilu is a nickname for French soldiers. It's like Tommy. Tommy is a nickname for English soldiers. A poor, unshaved poilu is suddenly shot to the head. The poilu did not see this coming. There is nothing in the illustration hinting at a potential shooter. The helmet could offer no resistance to the bullet, showing how fragile the body is in this context. Heroic travel. Let's take a look at another interaction typical of the heroic representation of combat. In many stories, the hero has to travel to distant lands. Among the living creatures on this planet, the animals, unlike plants, have the incredible ability of autonomous movement. This is emphasized for heroes who, when they interact with the Terran, are in total control of where and when they want to go. Visually and literally, the hero transforms the Terran by using a movement action. So you see here, you start, let's say, in the prairies, and oops, you're in Regina. This is especially apparent in graphic novels. Well, because when you read a novel, like it will say, and then he traveled from Montreal to Regina. But if you look at the graphic novels, like you see the changes, visually the changes. So. You can see the body transforming the background. Odysseus, one of the greatest and most ancient tales of Western civilization, is all about travel, just like the Iliad was all about war. After many adventures, despite many obstacles, Odysseus gets back home to his wife Penelope. Now, what we can see happening in comics of the Great War is that the self loses any control on the terrain. In previous wars, like the Napoleonic Wars, soldiers had to march a great deal. They would walk through different landscapes before engaging the enemy on the battlefield. But this is all gone after the Great War, quickly set up into a war of trenches. Soldiers don't move anymore. They simply wait in their trenches. The landscape offers a uniform and monotonous panorama of mud, dead trees, barbed wires, and destructions. This is reinforced by the monochrome representation of the battlefield universe in Charlie's War and Tardi's works. So, as you can see, what they did was in black and white, mostly. Wherever the soldier walks on the battlefield, the landscape is the same. Even when moving, the self has the feeling of not having moved at all. Furthermore, moving can kill while laying low underground is the key to survival. In fact, the absence of movement limits the human and makes him no more useful than a plant or rock, transforming him into a thing. Again, the human is confronted with a degrading loss of status. In this illustration from Tardi, a resigned poilu watches the no man's land at night under the rain. The silhouette of the soldiers barely emerges from the background as if he was already part of the muddy terrain. As if life in the trenches was not enough to limit Charlie's movement, the poor guy is subjected many times to degrading field punishments, making him feel like a thing. The recognition of heroism. An heroic tale usually includes an episode when the hero returns to his community to be greeted with a warm welcome. The community will officially acknowledge the superiority of the hero, and this will result with the self being raised to the status of idol. The recognition of heroism by the community is the most satisfactory way to gain the status of idol. A classic example might be a Roman emperor riding his chariot in triumph in the streets of Rome after a successful campaign of conquest, acclaimed as a god by a jubilant population. Heroic movies like Star Wars also come to mind, with a grandiose scene at the end to officially recognize the superior status of the hero. But with the enteric representation, the exact opposite happens. Whatever the self accomplished is despised by the community, who clearly rejects the self into the domain of the thing. Charlie, after fighting 2 years in the trenches and then having been sent against his will to fight the Red Army in the Russian Civil War, is back in London but can't find work. He is on the dole, which is which was a word for welfare in England, and a government inspector is giving him a hard time. Charlie doesn't even have enough money to enter the movie theater and has to entertain the people waiting in line for some change. Charlie's community obviously does not consider him superior at all for what he accomplished. On the contrary, he is to be forgotten, erased, just like the committee wants to forget the years of hardship. Tardi put lots of focus on the effects of war on people. His stories end with scenes of innumerable crosses in cemeteries, wounded poilu against a French soldier, in hospitals, and most of all, many pictures of gueule cassée, and again, those are disfigured veterans. A scar may be considered heroic. And there's that scene in the movie Avatar. There's that crazy colonel, and he has that scar on his head, and he's very proud of his scar. He said, "I could have removed it, but I decided to keep it." But so scars could be glorious. But in this case, the disfigurement portrayed here goes way beyond the heroic scar. The human cannot be recognized anymore. And the lack of humanity brings from the community the verdict of monster. A monster is a creature that belongs to the man of the thing, and the public does not want to identify with the monster. However, the rupture here creates a deep emotion, since the reader still has to identify itself with these monsters. We have seen representations of anonymous death, of absence of movement, of alienation from the community in Charlie's War and Tardi. According to these representations, by its nature, the Great War has no element of heroism to offer. It may be true, since the same approach can be observed in literature and films. However, the Great War offers powerful opportunities for anti-heroism. discover illustration from Tardi, from Tardi's La Guerre des Tranchées, perfectly summarizes my presentation. 100 years later, in comic books, the enduring representation of the Great War is those two anonymous dead bodies forgotten in a desolated landscape by their respective communities. Thank you.